So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time. Waiting for tonight. Oh.
So, take a look.
It's traditionally the grandest night in the World Wrestling Federation. WrestleMania, the great spectacle, the granddaddy of sports entertainment. A magical night where dreams become reality, where legends stand immortal, where incredible feats of athleticism are indelibly etched in the annals of time. But this year, a tempest engulfs Utopia. This year, clouds of hatred and anger have eclipsed the heavens, shed darkness upon the gods. We've watched as our heroes step down from their pedestals, witnessed malicious attacks by a depraved nation, beheld the dark, disturbing flashes from a once benevolent force. Tonight, three determined men unite to wage war against an evil nation. Their battleground, the cold, unforgiving streets of Chicago. Tonight, two giants appear willing to shed their noble armor, to embrace their dark side, to possess the coveted gold. And tonight, two angry young men destined to destroy each other will endure intolerable pain in a brutal submission match. It's WrestleMania, the showcase of the immortals, the greatest night in sports entertainment. It's supposed to be a night of celebration, a time to rejoice. But tonight, none of these men are smiling. And now, WrestleMania 13!
Welcome to another edition of Review Away. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting, and Wei, I will not lie to you, there is a slight fear in the back of my mind that this will not be the first time or the last time that we are reviewing WrestleMania 13.
We'll find out. I mean, if you're listening to this right now, to our perky voices.
We're energetic right now. Yeah. This is all fresh to us. I don't know where this is going to lead. I'm very excited right now. If we're doing it a third time Sunday morning, I'm going to be very angry.
If you're listening to this and our voices are suddenly very quiet, you'll realize that we've had to do it a number of times.
But let's try and be optimistic this week, Wei. I just want to say, I want to thank all of you who listened last week. It at least was a bit of a comfort to know that you all somewhat enjoyed last week's program, because I just thinking of the process we went through makes me angry and scared at the same time.
I especially want to thank the guy who decided to listen to it multiple times.
You cannot get more of a following than that. And I've got to say, as we talk about a following, at last check, Wei, before I came in here, we were at, I believe, 456 members.
You might be right. I think we're above that right now. At the moment, and this is Thursday we're recording.
Yeah, this is Thursday, February the 4th.
It's not Sunday. It's a bit earlier in the week. We are up to 456 members.
That's amazing. So, we have legitimately in the last 2 weeks added 100 people, and amazing that I did not think of this earlier, but this week on the law updates, I have started putting a link at the bottom of the updates for people to join, and I'm getting all this feedback from people about how that's where the group is, because they were taping. Mm-hmm. That is, Review Away is, who the fuck would know to spell it the way it is?
I really, it's a good question.
Maybe just the fact that I am promoting it in an update that our own fans read most days.
You should take a page out of the Jason Agnew book of promotion, because Jay,
I am nowhere near the horror that Jay has become.
If Jay is doing something, you know about it. If Jay is having a coffee, you know about it.
Yes, and there are a lot of comments that people post when he is drinking a coffee.
Yes. Now, there have been some complaints, as you mentioned, of it being difficult to find the group because you don't know. I mean, nobody knows how to spell my name. Is it W-A-I? Is it W-E-I?
Review
A-W-A-Y? A-W-A-Y. So, I kind of looked into this, and then if you know, Facebook offers vanity URLs, right?
You can
type in. Unfortunately, they don't offer vanity URLs for groups. They do offer it for pages, however.
Why?
I don't know. I don't know why.
It's bullshit.
It's actually a bit of a controversy. There have been many people.
Ours is like all this gibberish, and then it ends with like equals TS.
Yeah, well, what it is group.php question mark GID equals 415-343-80883. So if you can't remember that, well,
we should get business cards with that on it.
Maybe we'll make T-shirts.
Sure. Take it to like an indie show.
Yeah, along your sleeve. It'll go up past the sleeve.
That could be the new thing, Way.
Anyway,
what did you think of the Super Bowl?
I did not watch the Super Bowl. I actually was not even aware it was happening until sometime this week.
It's on Sunday night. It hasn't happened yet.
Oh,
but
so,
by the time people are listening to this, boy, they're saying, man, those Saints, what a come from behind win over the Colts.
Okay, is that supposed to be a
I was just trying deal? To be topical because it's going to be Monday morning. A lot of people are listening to this, such as Jake Cunningham, who listens on his way to work every morning in Dublin to a hospital, and it's an hour trek he has to make all the way to the hospital. So he has an hour there and then an hour home. So within his Monday, he listens to all of the Law and Review Away.
I wonder what he what sort of sights he sees on his trip.
I don't know. It's Dublin, Ireland. I mean, it's probably
a lot of grass.
Pretty nice place.
Sheep, maybe?
I'm just picturing like orange and green, everything. Never been to Ireland. I've been to England.
I don't think I've been to Ireland either, unfortunately.
Have you been anywhere in Europe?
I have, yeah. I've been to many places in Europe. I think I've been to Scotland. That's probably about as far as I've been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On to the review.
Sure.
All right, everyone. It's WrestleMania season, I guess, is upon us. As Matt Stryker explained at the Royal Rumble pay-per-view, it's when the season gets warmer, you don't need to wear a jacket anymore, it's WrestleMania season. And that's what we're in right now, Way, and we were going to
I still have to wear a jacket.
It's freezing out.
It's very cold outside.
It's freezing. I'm still getting over the sickness. I think it's almost gone. Yeah, but I was like losing my voice earlier today because I did a... I also host a show on the Fight Network called Ultimate Classic Wrestling, and I was doing that today, and by the end of it, my voice was, like, almost gone.
Which, by the way, you should all check out 8 o'clock
Monday,
Eastern.
8 p.m. Eastern on the Fight Network.
Right before Raw.
Yes. And then, you get CMLL at 11, St. Louis Wrestling at midnight, and then 1 a.m. Memphis Wrestling. So it's John Pollock and Jason Agnew night on the Fight Network.
How many hours is that total? 8 till what?
Well, are 11? You including Raw or just what
including
we have?
Including Raw.
Including Raw, then that's 6. 6 in the overrun.
Well, if you...
why not? We're going to put 2 hours of Impact on there starting March 1st.
If you have no desire whatsoever to get involved in a romantic relationship for the foreseeable future, invest 6 hours of your Monday night.
100%.
For wrestling.
Do you realize March the 1st, Raw will be on presumably for 2 hours. There's the rumor it could go to 3.
Mm-hmm.
Impact will be starting on Mondays that night as well.
Is that a permanent move now?
Yes. They'll be moving
Monday
to Mondays permanently March
1st. That's
great.
It's fantastic.
In addition, there's, of course, Ring of Honor on Monday nights. Mm-hmm. March 1st also features the debut of the return of Jay Leno to The Tonight Show.
Wow.
And it is also the Bite debut of Wrestlicious.
Holy shit.
Monday, March 1st is shaping up, in addition to all our wrestling content. That is a busy, busy night, Way.
That is. Should we have a party?
No, I'm just stating it.
Yeah, that's huge. Russell Lister's, it looks fantastic.
I will enjoy watching that.
I will be watching.
It's a half-hour campy wrestling show.
Yeah.
Let's get into it. WrestleMania 13, Way. It took place in March of 1997 from Chicago, Illinois at the Rosemont Horizon, a venue, Way, that you and I attended for a WrestleMania. And I think at some point we should review.
Oh, shit. I
you didn't even remember.
I did not even
You and me went to WrestleMania one year,
yeah,
Way.
Yeah, we did.
Well, I think at some point we should review that one, because we went there and there was the road trip, and we can give all our insight to the Hall of Fame the night before.
It was really the first trip where John Pollock and I really got
to. Yeah, that was the first time we went on a road trip together, and it was fascinating.
Let's do that. I mean, we'll talk about that at the end.
We'll talk
show.
Later. We have lots of time before WrestleMania. Opening video here, their production sucked in 97, I'll say. Maybe, I won't say sucked, but in comparison to what they've done since, this is so lame at this point.
Yeah.
I hated the voiceover guy. I just hated him.
Hey, but it's cheap.
It is really cheap. The thing that stood out to me was when they're previewing the Austin and Brett match, they clarify them as two angry young men. Brett was 39 years old at the time of this match. And then I noted, videos have come a long way in 13 years. WrestleMania way, that means a big sponsor on board.
PlayStation.
Which, on wrestling standards, in 97, PlayStation, I think, had just come out at this point.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big deal.
This
Sony PlayStation presenting WrestleMania.
One of the few items to grace a WWF pay-per-view blimp that's still in production today.
That's true. I mean, Stridex is gone. Is Nestle Crunch still around?
Nestle Crunch is still around, yes. But the 8-call ATT?
Yeah, no one does that anymore.
Come on.
On commentary, we have Vince McMahon, Jim Ross, and Jerry the King Lawler. And it's amazing way because, you know, they were losing money at this point, but they spared no expense on commentary because not only did we have the Spanish announce team, we had the French announce team of Ray Rougeau and Jean Prazard.
Hmm. Oh, wow.
Amazing. Every language
Ray
was covered.
Ray Rougeau and
Raymond. Remember from the fabulous Rougeau brothers?
I do, yes, I do.
Him and Jacques.
Lovely.
All right, let's get into the first match here, Way. It's a four-way tag match. The Godwins versus the Headbangers versus Phil LaFon and Doug Furness versus the New Blackjacks, which are Barry Windham and Bradshaw. They showed a video from August of 1975 of the original Blackjacks.
Yeah.
And then we go backstage where Todd Pettengill is interviewing the New Blackjacks.
They look exactly the same as the Blackjacks from the 1975.
Like black handlebar mustache. Their hair is shaved black or dyed black.
But what?
This was the future JBL.
Yeah. Who would have thought this would have been a good idea to not only call your group the same thing? Yeah, that's fine. You call them the New Blackjacks.
The new anything destined for failure.
But to give them the exact same look as they look like, it just looks so fake with the mustaches I assumed were fake.
I hated the end of this promo. Todd Pettengill had no way to end this interview, so these guys do their big promo, JBL's yelling about stuff, and it just ends with Todd Pettengill who has to do a throw to Vince McMahon, who just goes, "Let's play blackjack!
Big guys line up, little guys bunch up, come get your stuff, cause the blackjacks, ha-ha, ride again!
Come on!
Let's play blackjack!"
All right.
And that's how the interview ends. Into the ring we go.
Doug Furness and Phil LaFon, before we get into the ring.
Yes,
they walked out. This is, I mean, for these two, they've wrestled in a lot of places before,
yes,
but they've never wrestled in a WrestleMania. This is your one big WrestleMania moment.
Yep.
You walk out to the ring, and they don't even get your key right.
What did they say?
It said the Headbangers.
Oh, no!
They walked out. So I was looking at them. Those aren't the Headbangers.
That's like WrestleMania 20, which I also went to in New York City. Ultimo Dragon, he said one of the reasons he made his comeback, because he had that botched surgery on his arm, one of the main reasons he came back was it was his goal to work a WrestleMania at Madison Square Garden. And he got signed by the WWE in like mid-2003, and WrestleMania was at MSG the next year, and somehow he got on the card. Like,
he was in a battle royal, the cruiserweight
battle.
Yeah,
he got in. It wasn't like a singles program. Comes out to the ring, and he slips on the entrance.
Yeah.
Oh.
Not only that, I think he messed up a spot in the
ring.
He
did, man. He did not have a good night. Mm-hmm. Yoshihiro Asai.
It's unfortunate.
Let's keep going here. This was quite the retro experience for me, Way, because we had Thrasher wearing a white zombie shirt. Remember them? White zombie.
Yeah, of course. Rob Zombie.
I know. I'm just saying that you don't hear the white zombie too often anymore, and they were so badass in 97. That Thrasher wore their shirts.
Right.
They made a reference, and God damn it, I wish there were DVDs at this point so that we could have an extra focusing on this. Apparently, the night before, there was a WWF fashion show they held as part of WrestleMania weekend. Hmm. I could only dream of watching this.
WWE fashion show.
They mentioned a fashion show that the WWE held the day before in Chicago.
What would the fashions have been?
I don't know, but I so badly want to see it.
Would it have been like the WrestleMania denim jackets that they were trying to sell?
Fuck, dude, I isolated that clip for later.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, my God, man. We were so cynical. We think of the exact same shit.
Well, I'm just trying to think what could possibly be in a WrestleMania
It would be awesome,
show.
Dude. I don't know. Right. We then move on. Okay, this is what I didn't understand partway during this match. They had Mosh and Thrasher each get tagged, and they come into the ring. And Vince McMahon's explaining, oh, they must wrestle now. Why? Why wouldn't they just tag out?
That's exactly what they did.
Why do they have to engage?
Exactly what they did. Hold on a second. Yeah, that makes no sense whatsoever. Because if you pin your partner, then are you both eliminated?
I would assume, because you're eliminated once one opponent is gone.
See, but Yeah, okay. I guess the eliminations outweigh the person doing the pinning.
Lawler's jokes in this were just amazing. He mentioned that Vince's favorite rock group is Mount Rushmore.
I don't get it.
Favorite rock group.
Oh.
It's a group of rocks.
Sorry, a bit slow with these Lawler jokes, but that's very funny.
Did you notice the Blackjacks? They wore leather cowboy boots, and on their black tights, they had the letters BJ written on the back of them in white for Blackjacks.
Ah, no, I did not notice that either. That's great.
There was a fan who had a sign that just read, "Who are these bums?" they announced halfway through the match that the winner of this match gets a tag title shot on Raw the next night. So the biggest show of the year features a match to build up a title match for the next night on free television.
You gotta get these guys in there. You gotta get all eight of these men the WrestleMania paydays.
Bradshaw managed to get himself disqualified, and Jim Ross said that Texans are tough but not smart.
On a WrestleMania event,
yes,
you get yourself disqualified.
He was excited. He was just excited to be part of the new Blackjacks.
He just shoved the referee down. This was outrageous.
In the continuing great treatment Furnace and LaFon got, Lawler just mentions in passing, "I think Furnace and LaFon got themselves counted out." And that was it. They didn't even show a replay. They just disappeared.
Which is even stupider.
Fuck.
You get yourself counted out at WrestleMania. Anyway.
Thrasher went to try this this jump off the top rope where Mosh would launch him, and Thrasher almost slipped and killed himself.
Oh, by the way, that was the first mention of the what of maneuver we would get from Vince.
There were too many.
Not only that, Mosh does that off the apron, then Thrasher does a plancha off the turnbuckle, and we get our first forget about it.
He did these ridiculous ones where it was like a guy would hit a move, and before he was even covering it, Vince would be like, "He's just hit it. It's over, and they're going to be going to Raw for the tag team." No. Before he'd even go for a pinfall, Vince was classic for doing this, where he would get so wrapped up in it that we'd be like, "He punches him in the face. He's going to pin him. He's going to be the new champion." And he just gets so worked up, and it's like, fucking slow down. He hasn't even pinned him.
That's his style, though, John.
Oh, I hated it. I just hated it.
I loved it. I love Vince McMahon on commentary.
Lawler asks Vince if he has any White Zombie CDs, and McMahon replies, "Do they play with Tony Bennett?" Man, they should have had a rim shot. Mosh from the top rope hit the bombs away, which Jim Ross was made famous by Ray Stevens,
which Vince calls what a maneuver.
Yeah, and it was actually nicknamed the stage dive, and they pinned Vinnius Godwin, and the Headbangers are getting a tag title shot on a television show that no one remembers.
Did they end up winning the titles?
Did they win it the next night?
Well, I don't know if they won it. They won the titles. I don't know if they won them that night. Anyway, who cares?
We go backstage, and Sonny and Brian Pillman are hosting the WWF Superstar line all night long, and we'll be talking to the winners and losers tonight at 1-900-737-4WWF at a cost of $1.49 per minute. Canadian fans can call at 1-561-WWF1. So you could talk to the winners and the losers. Now, I was curious here. Would you get to talk to all the losers of the last match, all six of them?
I doubt it. I doubt they
or just the Godwins.
I really don't know. I honestly don't know. I don't know how many phone lines
I should have called.
You should have.
I wonder what would happen if we called that now.
I'm sure nothing. I'm sure you'd just get a blank signal. Pillman, to end off that little segment, he says, 36-24-36, that's her number.
Referencing Sonny, who was the most obvious prompter reader I have seen in WWF history. Her eyes were just moving from left to right.
Do they have prompters in the WWE? Do they use prompters?
No, I don't think they do.
So what makes you think that she would have read off
the prompter? They could have for this case, because she's reading. I would imagine for promos and stuff back then, they were just kind of like bullet points. No one was writing them outward for it. For all I know now, maybe they do. I know they've got to memorize when they go out in front of the crowd, but backstage, they very well could have
prompters. Well, you would know, John. You read off a prompter for your job.
I don't like it.
It really takes a certain skill to be able to read naturally off a prompter, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, I think it would not benefit these wrestlers at all. to read their lines word for word.
You don't expect these lugs to memorize it, do you? They then go ringside, and the Honky Tonk Man is in the ring, and they show Lou Albano and Arnold Skolin in the audience, and Ross makes a joke that Albano is drunk, which could have been the case. Apparently, he liked his liquor. Next match, Rocky Maivia versus the Sultan for the Intercontinental Championship way. Mm-hmm. They announce this is Rocky's first WrestleMania. They show Tony Atlas chewing bubblegum in the audience next to Albano. Lawler says that Rocky's speech the night before at the Slammy Awards was so boring that Christopher Reeve got up and walked out.
I love that one. That one I did get.
That's terrible.
Funny. The Honky Tonk Man sits down for commentary, and I thought he was hilarious. He was just all loud and hyper. And
he was excited.
He kept calling Vince McMahon.
McMahon.
The Rock had no tattoos at this time. This was a very young Rocky Maivia.
No, you're right.
And the Sultan, for those of you who don't know, went on to become Rikishi Fatu.
Yes.
Now, how much of a hassle was it for Rikishi to grow his hair out all that way, only to have it shaved completely bald, leaving just a stupid little ponytail off the top of his head?
Not to mention that gimmick lasted like no time flat. And then they asked him to gain like 200 pounds for his next gimmick.
Doing all that just for this stupid gimmick. I mean, imagine having to walk around in your daily life with that stupid, stupid hair.
For those not familiar with the Sultan's gimmick, his gimmick was that he had a mask around his face because his tongue had been cut off.
Oh,
and that's
why
he couldn't talk. And he needed Backlund and the Sheik to talk to him.
That's hilarious. And wait, this wasn't when he spat, when he had that green mist, right? Was that Quang?
That was Quang.
Was that also him?
That was Savio Vega.
Oh, yeah, never mind.
Quang.
Quang. Quang.
I didn't write down anything during the match, way. Just roll up by Maivia for the win.
All right.
Then a post-match beatdown by the Sultan and a splash, and then Sheik puts Rocky into the camel clutch. And then from there, Rocky Johnson makes the save. Now, this was just annoying because throughout the match, Vince McMahon must have said like four different times that Rocky Johnson is at home in Tampa, Florida, watching his son compete at WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. So when Rocky Johnson showed up, Rocky was genuinely shocked that his father was there. So you to tell me that his father came all the way here to WrestleMania, bought his own ticket apparently, and didn't even tell his son that he's in town?
Well, he wanted to surprise his son. That's logical. He wanted to surprise him. He didn't want the pressure on his son to know that his father was watching in the stands.
But then your father comes in and saves you from a beatdown from
like
a 65-year-old Iron Sheik.
It makes you look like a complete pussy. The Rock sucked here, man. He looked
so boring.
He looked like a poor emulation of his dad. His finisher was a flying cross body. Like, he was basically your default creative wrestler from a video.
It was. It really was. I think that was Randy Orton's finisher when they brought him up.
Yeah, yeah.
Because any second, third generation wrestler, they just give the flying cross body to.
Flying cross body. The Sultan will later go on to help Rocky Maivia by running over Stone Cold Steve Austin, I noted.
that's very interesting.
Yeah.
Todd Pettengill is with Ken Shamrock, and Shamrock gives us play-by-play of a beating that he gave to Billy Gunn on television the previous Monday. He demonstrates a shoulder lock, a takedown, and an ankle lock, and explains, "Now, I'm not trying to hurt him. I'm just trying to inform Gunn of who I was." And they show Billy Gunn tapping furiously to the ankle lock.
What is he actually tapping? He actually tapped?
Yes, he was tapping way before Kurt Angle was making anyone tap.
This was a historical.
That was this spot. I was like, this replay was put in here for me to watch 13 years later.
It's fate.
Because of my comment I made 2 weeks ago. Shamrock says that Hart and Austin will not intimidate him. We'll see. Next up, Doc Hendricks is with Triple H in China. And it sounded way like they recorded this in a tunnel. There was so much echo on this promo. I didn't know where they did this.
I didn't notice that.
That's all I noted.
All I noticed about this was that Triple H's voice was a lot higher at this time than
later. Oh, it was just your TV.
Really?
Yeah.
I also noticed that Chyna's jaw was a lot bigger and her boobs were a lot smaller.
Yeah, it's standard definition.
Yeah. Yep. For some reason, to begin this segment, they even decided to zoom off of Charter's chest. Maybe to show that he, you know, you think this is a man? No, it's actually a woman.
That's kind of clever.
Yeah. Very offensive, though.
Very offensive. Up next, well, you want to talk about offensive. Wait for the commentary during this match. We have Hunter Hearst Helmsley defending the Intercontinental Championship against Goldust. Lawler right away suggests that Chyna was breastfed by her father as a child because she looked so ugly.
Wow.
That's not even the worst of the commentary.
That's brilliant.
They announced that Goldust and Marlena won the Slammy Award last night for Best Couple. During this match, between Ross, Lawler, and Vince, Chyna was compared to an Amazon, a gorilla, and a horse. This woman must have been on the brink of insanity if she ever watched back on this. Like, imagine the self-esteem if you're listening to this, and that's what you're being called. An Amazon, a gorilla, and a horse, and you were breastfed by your father because of your looks. Holy shit. Ross brings up Wilbur Snyder during an abdominal stretch spot. Vince and Lawler were very confused by this reference. McMahon notes, it's been a lot of DDTs used tonight, which I guess was a subtle note to the agents backstage. Enough with the fucking DDTs.
JR was pretty silent in this three-man commentary team. He didn't say much.
I don't think he enjoyed working with Vince on commentary.
No, I don't think so either.
The finish was Goldust lifts Marlena to the apron, and then Hunter knocks Goldust into Marlena, and Marlena goes into the arms of Chyna and is swung like an orangutan.
Yeah, Chyna just really... swung Marlena.
When I first saw this, I thought the woman was dead. Like, I thought it was It looked like a blow-up doll that Chyna was just...
Yeah,
flipping around everywhere, and Goldust walked into a pedigree, and Hunter gets the win.
Yeah, I wasn't sure what move she was attempting. I think it was supposed to be a bear hug, but
a bear hug, and then she just throttled her. It looked great, I thought.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But this, I didn't like this match at all. It felt like a TV match that killed the crowd. Who cares?
Then we go to Mark Merrow and Sable, who this is how they earned their WrestleMania payoff. Were modeling a hockey jersey, a WrestleMania 13 hockey jersey, and denim jacket for $99 and $69 a piece. Wei, would you have bought a WrestleMania 13 hockey jersey or denim jacket if you had the opportunity?
I would not, but I would really, really, really like the opportunity to meet somebody who would. I wonder, who are the people that
buy this? If anyone out there has a picture of yourself wearing either of these, I'll send you a DVD.
And we'll put your picture on the group's main photo for a week.
You know what? I'm making an impromptu contest.
All right.
If you have any, like, the lamest merchandise you have bought, take a picture of yourself wearing it and send it in to us. Or go post it on our Facebook wall.
This is a great idea.
This is fantastic, actually. Yeah. If you have, like, I want the campier, the better. Like, the lamest wrestling shit you ever bought, you have to put it on, take a picture of yourself, and put it on our Facebook group.
If it's an item, hold the item. But take a photo of yourself holding the item so that we know it's
you. I promise you, if it's good, you'll get a good prize. I will not send out some shitty prize, like a Polish DVD.
I'm excited for this contest.
Okay, that sounds like a great contest, actually.
Wicked.
Next up, first off, we went to the America Online chat room, where Shawn Michaels was trying to type out something on a computer. Maybe he was writing to Dave Meltzer.
Hmm. Yes.
I don't know what he was doing.
It was Meltzer online at the time? Was he very
no,
much on?
No, no, I don't. This was 97, dude. Not too many people at the internet. Maybe. WWF was kind of ahead of the curve here, I guess.
Maybe he was visiting John Pollock's GeoCities website.
No, I wasn't around until 98, Wei. Not around. Next up, Wei, the Tag Team Championships on the line. Owen Hart and the British Bulldog defending against Vader and Mankind. And I really enjoyed this, where Jim Ross came to interview Owen and the Bulldog at the start of the match. And he asked the Bulldog if he's offended that Owen said he was the smarter one and the leader of the team. And it was great, where Owen was just like, "Stop causing problems! But are you the leader?" "Yes, I'm the leader." And then he just quickly darts out of there and Bulldog's just like none the wiser to any of this. And it was just so funny. I laughed out loud.
Yeah. It was very good.
You probably didn't notice it, but the highlight of the match to me, Wei, was that there was like some rest spot and there's a fan walking down the steps, and they had just bought food, and they fall down the steps in the audience.
Wow.
And I rewound and laughed.
I did not notice that. You have a sharp...
I just happened to catch it. I just saw this person. There was nothing happening on the screen, and this person just had, like, popcorn or something and fell. It's great.
Those stairs are very steep.
And they're slippery. Especially, so, like, how many Cokes probably get dumped on those for a live event?
Especially when you're carrying a giant tray of nachos. It can be very difficult.
Thankfully, the fan that fell was not Stuart Hellenhart, who were shown in the front row.
Mm-hmm.
They announced during this match that 18,197 fans are at the Rosemont Horizon for this event.
Is that what became the Allstate Arena?
Yes, same arena. Yeah, same arena.
That's why I didn't recognize it. Anyway.
Bulldog gets the hot tag and attacks, and he knocks off the jockstrap of Vader at one point.
Yes. This was an interesting match because
they're both heels.
Although I would say Vader's performance definitely got their team more heat, and it actually made Bulldog and Owen seem like the underdogs here. With the hot tag, yes, Owen is then under attack. Mankind then applies the mandible claw to the Bulldog, and they all fall outside while the claw is still applied. And
Mankind keeps the hold on.
Yes,
and gets counted out,
and we get a count out.
It's a bullshit finish at WrestleMania.
Double count out.
And then afterwards, they're attacking them. And Vader comes and tells Mankind, kill him.
Yeah.
And that's it.
That's it. An okay match, but a lame finish.
Yeah, very lame finish.
WrestleMania show, especially.
Yeah, this was just coming across as another WWF pay-per-view.
Yes.
We go to a video package for Steve Austin against Bret the Hitman Hart. And then they introduce, from the Ultimate Fighting World, Ken Shamrock as the special enforcer referee for this next match. It's Steve Austin and Bret Hart in an I Quit match.
Mm-hmm. This video package, did you end up watching it?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it was very cheesy, but I thought it was very well written and very effective.
Now, we should kind of lay the groundwork for this match. At this point in time, Austin was definitely going in the babyface direction. Mm-hmm. Bret was going in the heel direction. But they hadn't quite done the official turn yet for either guy. So this match is very important. And Austin comes out first, and his entrance, the glass breaks at the entranceway, and he comes out. And then Bret, his music goes off, and I thought this was such a nice little subtle touch that he was getting sick of the WWF and how they were treating for him. And for his fucking entrance, he has to walk over the glass for Austin's entrance. He has to walk over this glass.
Did they actually show him walking over, stepping over?
Like, WWF at one point was so good at this little subtle shit that they'd never do anymore. And I just watched that, and I was like, if I was Bret, I would be pissed off that I gotta walk over this fucker's glass for his entrance. I'm Bret fucking Hart.
There is no respect anymore.
None.
Even your fans have changed.
Oh, that little thing. I don't know why I enjoyed it so much, but I thought it was great.
The man who leads this change is Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Early on, they brawl through the audience. Ken Shamrock is wearing the tightest spandex shorts ever.
He is. And the tightest referee shirt ever, too.
It was not necessary. There's a spot where Bret grabs a chair to put on the ankle of Austin, but Austin gets up and hits Bret in the back with the chair. Austin teased a sharpshooter at one point, but Bret Hart counters, and here, I swear, was the back and forth between Lawler.
Yeah.
I thought for a moment we were going to see the Hitman's, Bret Hart's very own submission hold applied against him.
Would that have been the greatest of all time, to have to submit to the sharpshooter?
Hey, it could happen. It's just that painful.
Amazing.
Prophetic.
Very prophetic.
The audience was very interesting to study in this match. Everybody cheered for Austin, but there were cheers for Bret as well. But the cheers for Bret were a lot more high-pitched, and it seemed like his cheers were mostly coming from women and children. So it's a split back then, much like Cena's today.
Austin, at one point, he's thrown into the timekeeper, and this guy falls out of his seat, and this is the spot where Bret bladed Austin. And it's probably one of the best blade jobs in the history of the promotion. And it's an image that is stuck in everyone's head for a spot that comes up in a few minutes. But Bret attacks the knee of Austin with the chair. Austin chokes Bret with an electrical cord. And And then Brett comes back and hits Austin with a ring bell.
What was so brilliant about that, that particular spot, that ring bell had been there for most of the match. Like, when Brett first had brought out the chair, he brought that ring bell along with him, and they did not use it at all until this very moment when it was
perfect. And it was very well done. Brett gets the sharpshooter on, and there's a long tease, and this is the infamous scene where Austin is, his face is all bloody, he's trying to break out. At one point, they even tease that he's broken it, but Brett gets it back on, and then Shamrock stops the match with Austin passing out rather than quitting. This is awesome.
A full 2 minutes. I mean, in 2 minutes, it doesn't even seem that long for a spot like this, but it was just perfect.
They even set up a little thing afterwards where Brett came back and kept attacking Austin, who the whole audience was sympathetic towards here. Yeah. Starts attacking the knee, and this leads to Shamrock lifting and dropping Brett.
Well, if you remember in Wrestling with Shadows, Brett actually runs through the commentary with this whole sequence. He said, he mentioned that this was his moment to finally become a full-fledged heel, and as a heel would do, he would come back and attack the defenseless babyface.
This match, many people have said, is the best match in WrestleMania history, and it's a fantastic match.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing bad I can say about this match.
It saved the show, let's just say.
This is the only thing I remember from this show, and it was part of the reason I picked this, was to go back and watch this.
And, Brett came out to cheers, right? And even up till the finish, fans were cheering for his victory. But the moment he left, it was all boos and middle fingers.
It's just something to watch in terms of for people that don't necessarily get pro wrestling and kind of, you know, manipulating people's emotions and stuff. I mean, there's few better than Brett in terms of telling a story in the ring, and this might have been his best one ever.
And Austin as well.
Austin too. I mean, like, these two were just fantastic in this match. And this, when you look at it, this match was really, it catapulted Hart into the whole Hart Foundation heel run, and Austin into who would be your biggest babyface of all time in terms of money that he would draw. I mean, this match was so important for WWF business that, I mean, it's hard not to say that there's nothing wrong with this match in the least.
As much as we talk about the bad in wrestling, when wrestling is bad, it's really bad. But when it's good, it's really good. It's really good emotional storytelling. And this was a perfect example.
I did not feel good about the people who had to follow this. They go backstage and Todd Pettengill's with the Nation of Domination, and Farouk threatens to bring the kitchen sink to the ring. And we've got a Chicago street fight with Farouk, Savio Vega, and Crush against Ahmed Johnson and the Legion of Doom. And I would actually say that this match placement was probably smart.
Yes.
This crowd was so hot for this match.
Yes.
And I did not recall this match sticking out in my memory. And when I saw this was the match, I was like, this will suck. And you know what? It did not.
Well, think about it. The crowd had just had a very serious affair with Austin and Brett. They'd just been through a bit of an emotional roller coaster. Now let's just watch a bunch of big dudes hit each other over the head.
It's just a brawling garbage match, but it was exactly what the crowd wanted.
Yes.
They were apeshit for the Legion of Doom, who obviously are from Chicago. I should note, this past week, the WWF held a press conference that was carried by multiple outlets about WrestleMania coming to Atlanta in 2011. Back in 97, Vince McMahon, just in passing, announces WrestleMania 14 will take place March 29th, 1998, from the Fleet Center in Boston. Tickets are not on sale yet, so don't try to buy tickets yet. And that was the announcement for WrestleMania next year. Anyway, during this brawl, I saw a fan with a sign that read, Ahmed Johnson number one. No.
What's funny about that?
Ahmed Johnson was never number one.
Unless
it was a unique list of terrible workers.
Well, John, they probably handed that sign to the fan.
Right. That's right. Vince was out in the lobby. There was a plancha by Ahmed over the guardrail. Did you just hear that?
Yeah, they're deconstructing they're taking a bunch of shit down in the office, I think.
Great.
Anyway. Yes.
A plancha by Ahmed Johnson over top of a guardrail.
Chicago street fight.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Well, the sad part is that could not happen because three of the six are no longer with us in this. No, wait. How many? Crush has passed away and Hawk has passed away.
Yeah.
Two. Animal, do you want to describe the pile driver spot on the table?
Yeah, well, Animal attempts to pile drive Farouk over the French announce table. And the moment I see that he's attempting this, I'm like, is he really going to try this? This cannot end well.
No, it did not.
So Animal lifted Farouk up, and I guess he couldn't get proper a proper hold of Farouk, or Farouk couldn't get a proper hold of Animal. And sure enough, they slip off from the weight, and they both fall down into a pile. Table not broken.
That was reason number one it wasn't great to be Farouk on this night. Reason number two was then he took a fire extinguisher spot that the camera missed, but luckily the replay captured it. All of a sudden, Farouk had a noose, and he was trying to use it onto Hawk. A fucking noose.
Yeah,
a
noose.
Jesus Christ. Crush used a wrench in this match. LOD hits the Doomsday device. Then, this was dumb. LOD hits the Doomsday device, then they pick up Crush, and they just run him into a 2x4. Wasn't the Doomsday device enough?
Well, no.
It looked so shitty where he just run. They push him into a piece of wood that's supposed to take him out. Anyway, yeah, but they get the win.
But the point is that it's a foreign object. The moment that it's a foreign object, no matter what it is, it should hurt more than any wrestling move.
The post-match features PG-13, who were the rappers for the Nation of Domination, taking a double Doomsday device on the shoulders of Animal and Ahmed Johnson.
Poor guys, man.
They got killed.
Especially from Ahmed Johnson to take a move that's already dangerous enough.
Yeah, he had to take a Pearl River plunge as well. Lots of heat and a big pop for the finish in Chicago. Can't say much bad about this match. It was exactly what the crowd wanted.
Yes, yes. It wasn't that long and it wasn't that offensive and it got the crowd going. So, you know what? This was good.
If you're excited about the last two matches, well, next came the promo for the forthcoming In Your House pay-per-view on 420.
It's about sportsmanship.
There will be no mercy.
Athletic camaraderie.
Everybody better get out of my way.
And respect for your fellow man.
Somebody's gonna get their ass whipped.
In Your House. And it's coming back to your house April 20th.
There's nowhere to hide. Nowhere to run.
In Your House, live Sunday, April 20th on pay-per-view.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
I didn't have that promo on the tape.
Oh, yeah, they probably took those out. Wait a minute, yeah, you would have.
Was it
the same tape we watched.
I guess I skipped it. But was it a 420 reference promo?
No.
Was it okay, never mind.
It was just a lame promo.
What year was Columbine?
99.
Okay, so that would have been 2 years before Columbine. That was 420 as well, wasn't it?
Was it 420?
Columbine.
I don't think it was.
Let me look this up.
It was definitely April.
April 20th, 1999.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Hitler's birthday, it's all 420.
Anyway. We move on way to the main event of the evening. And first off, Shawn Michaels comes out for commentary for the main event. And they cut to a sign, and they pan across, and it reads, Shawn Michaels Cream Team.
What do you think that means?
I don't know what that means.
I'll tell you what it means.
What does it mean?
Cash rules everything around me. Cream get the money. Dollar bill, y'all.
Waiting.
I think that's what that means.
That's exactly what it means, clearly. Michaels, of course, was injured because of the loss of his smile at this point. He gets into the ring, and did you catch what he did as he got into the ring?
No, I fast-forwarded what happened.
He gets onto the apron, looks over to the commentary where Vince is, then he opens up his suit jacket, looks in the camera, and does a Wolfpack sign.
Does he?
Yes.
Interesting.
Because he didn't give a fuck.
Nope.
This prick teased doing his pose in the ring, and he goes to do it, and does it, and then flinches, so the pyro goes off. And then Michaels does, just to fuck with the pyro.
Wow, he's
like asshole. Just an asshole.
Pyro guy.
Todd Pettengill's backstage and Sid fucks up a promo. Let's hear it.
WrestleMania is the biggest event of the world! And it comes once a year! But the night when darkness falls, every man, woman, and child will be scared. Except for one person. Only one person is not scared of the darkness, and one person is not scared of the Undertaker, and that is me, my friend. In the game we play, I am the master, and I am the ruler of the world.
See, Sid's promo style is
terrible.
Well, it's very much like a grunge song. It's loud and then quiet.
And then you got it loud
and then quiet.
What are you talking about?
That's exactly it.
Psycho Sid and The Undertaker for the WWF Championship. This match.
Your WrestleMania main event.
This is the main event of WrestleMania. Now, you know, I got to say, The Undertaker has really... He's improved as years gone by. Because this match sucked, dude. And The Undertaker is just as much to blame as Sid. This was not a good match. And I'm not going to blame it all on Sid. Taker was not that great in this match. Jim Ross states right at the start that this won't be a technical masterpiece. Bret Hart comes out, and he gets into the ring before the match, and he calls Michael's injury a pussyfoot injury. Then he cuts a promo on both Sid and The Undertaker and tells Taker that their friendship is over. He said, "When you close that door on my head, you close the door on our friendship." I just picture Bret and The Undertaker like going out and having beers together in character.
Playing chess or Connect Four.
He calls Sid a fraud, which I'm sure a lot of fans online would agree with. Sid gives Bret a powerbomb and tells him to get his whining ass out of here, and he gets a babyface response. So I think clearly they were teasing Sid going face after this.
I really did. Yeah, did you? Okay, yes. And then he gets powerbombed. Did you mention that?
Yes, he was.
He gets powerbombed.
Yeah, after the powerbomb is when he tells him to get out of here.
I didn't understand this. I mean, you
to
just,
me, it fucked up the psychology of the match before the match.
You just had Bret come out as you know, one of the biggest threats to your main baby faces, and he just comes out, cuts a stupid whiny promo, and then gets powerbombed and carried out. Not only that, he'll come back later in the match, and it just.
I think it was to get over him being just a whiner. That was where they were going with it. I don't know if it's necessarily appropriate for the main event of WrestleMania.
It made him look like a comedic character the number of times he was put out.
Yeah, yeah. And the commentary didn't really help that. During this match, we see Sid reverse a tombstone, and then tombstones The Undertaker for a near fall. That was an okay spot. As you said, Bret comes back. He hits Sid with a chair, and then Taker hits a chokeslam for a two count. Bret comes back a third time. He's on the apron, and Sid knocks him down to the floor.
Sean even says, "Jesus, doesn't he ever get tired of getting beat up?"
Yeah. And Sid, as he knocks him down, he walks back into a tombstone by The Undertaker. To me, it kind of deflated the win for The Undertaker, that he kind of backdoored himself into a win here because Bret had distracted Sid. But that's the finish, and Undertaker gets the win with the tombstone, and he is your World Wrestling Federation champion. And I will just note that... This was a time where they were getting slaughtered in the ratings by WCW. WCW was so far and ahead of WWF, and on the biggest show of the year, Vince McMahon ends the show with The Undertaker holding up the belt, and he states, "The dark days of the WWF have begun."
This was not a good match.
No, it was not.
There were just so many wrestles. A minute into it, and Sid gets Undertaker in a chin lock. That lasts for a long time. And what do you... I mean, you can't last more than a minute without doing these spots.
That was such a long chin lock spot. Yeah. Like, it must have gone 8 years.
Yes. And it has been said for years that this is the infamous match in which Sid shit his pants.
Is it?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
A lot of people say it might have been a house show, but a lot of people say it was this particular match. I tried to look, and I couldn't find the precise moment when it probably happened. But,
Tim Sylvia did that in a fight.
Yeah.
With Suario Silva.
That's right. But kudos for Undertaker for going through all those tombstone pile driver spots, if this was true.
Yeah, well, this was a shitty match. Literally. So that's WrestleMania 13, everyone, our first WrestleMania we have reviewed. And I'm going to still give this a 6.5 out of 10. Mainly, you know, Austin and Bret for probably 6 of that. And, you know, that street fight, way better than I thought it had any right to be.
Yeah. I give it a 5 out of 10. But for the same reasons as you.
Is that the first time I've rated something higher than you?
It might be one of the first few
times. I'm usually the one pulling the rating down.
Mm-hmm.
Not a great WrestleMania, but not the worst WrestleMania, and there's no way you can really say it was a horrible WrestleMania with that Austin Bret match.
It's really interesting to compare this to future Manias, because in terms of
this
talent...
This is just another pay-per-view, really. Well,
but in terms of talent, they had everybody on this card. They had Hunter, they had Foley, they had Rock, but none of them had come
into
their own.
It was like a year to 2 years where most of them kind of came into their prime in the company.
Yeah.
But I just as well, it was like, this was WrestleMania, and it's here... And it just, to me, outside of the Austin-Bret match, it just felt like They didn't really make it like this giant presentation, you know?
Nothing was memorable whatsoever besides that one match.
That was it, and it was just, it's treated almost like a... And this was one of the... This pay-per-view did like... It did something like 237,000 buys, like just a ridiculously low number at the time. Mm. It was when business was just on the toilet, and then the next year they just explode. So... That's our review of WrestleMania 13. Now,
we got one piece of feedback from the message board. Patrick McHugh says, WrestleMania 13 was the very first WWF show I ever saw. Up until that point, I had only really watched WCW. Looking back on it, it can't really be said that it was a great show. However, it had some moments which were quite memorable for me. The Bret Hart-Steve Austin match is still my favorite match ever. The Legion of Doom's entrance of music and their shoulder pads were awesome. Not the best WrestleMania by a long way, but not the worst. One great match supported by an average undercard and a frankly shitty, in more ways than one if that rumor is to be believed, main event. By the way, thanks for the DVD, guys. You're welcome. That's Patrick McHugh.
There you go. And we mentioned there, Patrick received the DVD a while ago, and we're about to give out some more prizes. Because last weekend way was the Royal Rumble.
This is it.
This is it. This is the big announcement of our winners from last week. I will thank everyone. There were 148 contestants in this, way more than
Holy
I anticipated.
Shit.
And I first off want to thank Chris Engler for designing a Excel spreadsheet for me. It was a fantastic help because when I suddenly realized how many of these ballots I had to go through, it was a little overwhelming.
I knew the moment you proposed this to me, I was like, John, this is going to be a little complex. Are you going to be able to... do all this?
I did not expect 148 people.
Well, how long did it take you to actually tabulate everything?
It took me 3 days.
3 days.
I didn't finish till Wednesday.
Well,
tabulating
on behalf of all the people who entered, thank you very much. And what are the results?
Well, first of all, I'm just going to go through the categories and who exactly were. First of all, I want to say that I'm a little pissed off at Wikipedia because I had banked on them having the times of how long each entrant lasted in the Rumble. Like they do every year.
Mm-hmm.
I checked that before I put that as one of the categories. Monday morning, that was not posted. Monday afternoon, they had the length of the first two entrants. So I'm like, okay, they're at least starting on it. Wednesday night, they were gone. There was no times. So I had to sit down with a stopwatch, and I had to start, and then every time someone entered the ring, I had to write down when they got into the ring, and then when they got out, I had to write down the time. So my criteria for this, everyone, is just so you're aware, the time in the ring began as soon as they got into the ring. Not when their entrance hit, mm-hmm. not when they came out, when they were in the physical ring.
And that is officially how they count it, too.
Yes, so that's what I counted. So first of all, of course, Edge won the Royal Rumble, and this obviously, there were a handful of people who did pick Edge to win. So congratulations, you earned your 5 points. John Cena was obviously the last one eliminated. Most eliminations this year, Shawn Michaels was 6. The longest to last inside was about 22 minutes, and it was John Cena. The shortest was MVP, who was in there for about 7 seconds. Entrant number 1 was Dolph Ziggler, that nobody got. And entrant number 30 was Batista. So with this, that was 3, 6, 7 categories. So that means you had a potential to get 30... Wait a minute.
Uh-oh. Are we going to have to...
No.
Are you going to have to redo everything?
That means you could get a maximum of 42 points. And the winner got 13. And that was Derek Schulter, who had 13 points. And then we were going to give it to the top three. However, we had a three-way tie for second. Andrew Rodriguez, Alan Ishak, and Kyle Bloomfield all got 11 points. So we are going to send prizes to those four. Derek, Andrew, Allen, and Kyle. Congratulations. This was, you know, I was worried we were going to have like 75 people tie for first. I was really worried about this in the end. And thankfully it worked out. We had one clear-cut winner in Derek and then three people winning the secondary prize pack. So I will contact you and we will be sending you out a review-away prize pack. But this was a daunting contest.
Yeah, well, congratulations to the people who did do so well. And thank you all for entering. And thank you, John, for going through all that effort.
Well, I'm going to look forward to this next contest now where we can see shitty merch worn by Review Away listeners.
It'll be much easier, yes.
Just go post the photos in the Facebook group, the official Facebook group of Review Away, which, if you don't know the link, is in all of my daily updates on liveaudiowrestling.com. So, Way, I guess that brings us to the close here, and I guess what is on tap for us next weekend?
Well, I'd like to continue with this WrestleMania theme, but I was looking at our calendar, and we actually have quite a few weeks to go. So I'm thinking of saving some of the more popularly suggested WrestleManias for a bit later on. I would personally like to do a WrestleMania that we both attended, WrestleMania 18 from Toronto. Right,
awesome.
Here in Toronto.
That's right. So, you and me both attended this, but we did not know each other at the time.
No.
So we were not sitting together. We did not know each other.
So I did not know your experience. You did not know my experience.
All right. Well, I will. Sure. I have some good stories from that one.
All right. I look forward to it.
All right. So WrestleMania X8 is up next weekend.
And please share your own stories, too, especially those of you who actually went to the show in Toronto.
At the former Skydome, now Rogers Center. So, yeah, for sure, send us a... The best way is go post your feedback on the Facebook wall rather than emailing us individually. That's probably the best bet. And tell all your friends to join, because we want to hit 600 people by WrestleMania time. We're at 456 right now, so the count is on. Anyway, that is the end of Review Away. Hopefully this is the last time we have to review WrestleMania 13 in the next couple of days, because last weekend, Way, the best way I can describe last weekend's events were hell, and that's why I want to go over to you and say.
Awesome. Well, let's hope that records.
Dude, I'll cry.
Me too. No.